Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the interview chair brought to you by Canine Chronicle TV and Dog Show Tips. Today on the chair, we have absolute dog show royalty. It's Lydia Coleman Hutchinson from Wolf Pit Cairns, and it's a great interview. So sit back and relax and listen to Lydia as she tells us all about herself, which wasn't easy for me to pull out of her because she didn't like talking about herself, but I made her do it. So sit back and enjoy. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the interview chair brought to you by Canine Chronicle TV and Dog Show Tips. Today in the chair is Lydia Coleman Hutchinson. And how are you, ma'am? It's good to see you.
Very well, thank you.
How is it? How's the weather down there right now?
We have a gorgeous day today, a cloudless blue sky, but it is getting a little chillier, although this coming weekend is supposed to warm up again. So
good, yeah.
It'll be fine, whatever it is.
Yeah, we're a little chilly up here right now. I just turned the heat on this morning. So we were supposed to do this interview earlier today, but you had to do progesterone test. Is that what you told me?
Yep, that's one thing I had to do, and I had some errands to run, so I combined.
So it never ends.
No, so it never ends.
All right, I'm going to get on with the questioning. Tell us all how you got started in this world of dogs and how old you were when you started.
Well, my parents had Cairns before I was born. They were given one as a gift simply because the Scotty that was her protector kept getting beaten up. He was, you know, out on the streets protecting her. And so the people who gave it to my parents said that, you know, she'd have to get away from that influence. So anyway, I first went to a dog show when I was nine. And I think it was the second show I went to. I had just turned 10, and my friends that were helping my parents, because they were just getting started as exhibitors, they suggested that I enter junior showmanship, which, of course, at that time was called children's handling. So Anyway, I did. They were boxer breeders, kind of quite well known, and he took me out outside of the tent and gave me a 15-minute talk or a showing about how to show a dog. So I went in and I came out fourth in the class. So I was hooked from then on, you know. So I was just 9 or 10 years old when I got started.
Oh, wow. And your parents
at
that point, were they?
I saw puppies being born. You know, I saw puppies being born before that with my parents' dog. So that's.
So did your parents bred Cairns as well then?
Well, they just were starting, right.
Oh, okay.
And they bred a bitch, and they kept one of her puppies too. So they had two Cairns.
What was their kennel name?
Wolf Pit.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Excellent. So you just carried on. That's wonderful. So where did it go from there? You've had a taste of children's handling, and what happened from there on in?
Well, I think I went to every dog show they went to, and my sister went along too. She's 5 years younger than I am, and she never got bitten by the bug the way I did. But, you know, I never missed a dog show, and I guess I started showing regularly when I was about 11 or maybe 12.
You started showing your parents' dogs?
Yeah, I did. And that was great fun. Anyway, I just kept on doing it. And then I discovered that I really enjoyed showing in breed competition rather than the junior showmanship. Although I did keep up with that occasionally. We were very sporting about that. And once we got the number of wins that we needed to have to qualify to show at Westminster, we stopped showing and gave other kids a chance. There were no ranking systems or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And so I showed at Westminster two or three times, I'd say, in the junior showmanship. And I came in second one time, which was very exciting.
Yeah, for sure. So did you just carry? So when did you decide that you yourself wanted to carry on the Cairns and breed them?
Oh, gosh. Probably pretty early, you know, like maybe 12, 13, I don't know.
Were you already taking an active role with your parents in yes, learning of the pedigrees and et cetera?
Absolutely. And I went to work. We moved from one town in Connecticut to another town. And it was located near the home of Miss Ruel Kelschner, who had very well-known Hollycourt miniatures, poodles. And she had seen me helping a couple of other poodle people at shows. And so she knew that I knew how to train them a little bit anyway. And so she invited me to come and work with training her puppies for show. So I started doing that when I was, I guess, 13 or 14. I remember my parents had to drive me because I didn't have a driver's license that young. And so that's how my interest in poodles came about, as well as the Cairns.
So she mentored you in the poodles, obviously. And when did you get a poodle at the house?
Her way of paying me, because I was underage really to receive any wages, was to pick any puppy that she had there and it could be mine. And I did. I picked a very pretty puppy that turned blue in color, interestingly enough. And she became a champion and had two litters.
And mom and dad were okay with you branching out into poodles?
Yes, except that the reason I stopped was I went off to college and my mother it wasn't fair to her to have to groom and brush right. The poodles almost every day.
And, I can understand that.
Absolutely. And so I decided to stop with the poodles. I kept Dee Dee, of course, that was the name of mine, until she died, and she was 14, I think.
So after university, what was your first move to get back into dogs? Did you continue showing during university?
Yes, as long as it was a close show and I could meet my parents. I did. Yeah. I didn't have a car, so I had to figure out ways of getting to the shows. But I did somewhat, you know, but not full time.
So wait until you were through university, and then did you just pick back up again and just start full core, or how did it go from there?
No, I got married.
Oh, that gets in the way.
but my husband was always very supportive of my interest, but mm-hmm. It wasn't possible to keep on for a while. So I kept just my poodle. She was definitely a one-person dog, and she would not have thrived, you know, with being away from me. So I kept her, and she was never really affectionate towards my husband, but she tolerated him, and he understood too that you know, that it was important to me to have at least one dog. And then when we moved due to his Navy. We were traveling around, and we were going to go to my parents' home just for the weekend. And I asked him, I said, you know, I would really like to bring Bonnie home with me for her last few years. And are you okay with that? And he said, if you take this one dog home with you, you're going to ask me for another. And I said, oh, no, that's not it at all. I just want Bonnie to spend her last years with us. And so he bought that. But in retrospect, he knew much more about my character than I did. Yeah.
So were you still, in the meantime, while you just had Bonnie at home, you were you still helping your parents with their kennel, with their dogs?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, very much so. And when we were transferred to Charleston, South Carolina, that's a lovely, lovely place to live about 9 months of the year. But it's not lovely in June, July, and August. And
a little hot.
So, yeah, we would pile into the car, all the dogs, our three children, my husband and myself, and drive from South Carolina to Connecticut to my parents' home. And the children and I would spend the summer there. And so I had access to getting to dog shows too.
When did you start with the Cairns yourself?
Oh, well, Bonnie Bairn was mine, and another one that we had, Saucy, was also mine. So I guess pretty early, you know, early teens.
And but you were full time with the Cairns. But when were you actively breeding them yourself at that point?
Once or twice, yes, I did. Yeah, Bonnie had several litters.
Mm-hmm. When did the kennel come home to you? When did you start having them with you?
Oh, I don't know the answer to that, frankly. I mean, when we were moving around some, I couldn't have very many, you mm-hmm. know. So they mostly stayed in Connecticut with my parents. But as soon as I would get there, I would get to work with them and, you know, have 3 months of bliss.
Yeah. At that point in your career, did you have any mentors that were significant to you helping you with the Cairns, like grooming and showing?
You know, actually, well, I will say Miss Helen Hunt was the biggest mentor in Cairns. It was a breed of pretty much little old ladies, and some of them, you know, cottoned up to me and were very friendly, and others just did their own thing. So I don't think I was truly mentored very much by anybody except Miss Hunt. She had the shag bark kennel.
Okay, so you just learned basically right. as you went. So.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, excellent. What made you, well, give me some of your highlights in the Cairn world.
Oh, gosh.
You don't have to tell all of them, just some that you can think of popped to your mind that were than memorable.
Yeah, the first big win, I think, that I ever had was showing my dog, or my parents' dog, Cairn Woods Quince, and he won the national specialty three times, I think three in a row. And then he didn't go again until he was a 13-year-old veteran. And he won in a huge entry at Montgomery County at the age of 13. And that was amazing. I think that he was the oldest dog of any breed to have won their national specialty at that time. And so that was a true highlight for me.
For sure.
Yeah. I've had, I got with a dog that was related to Quince many generations later. I got 5 best in show, showing him myself. And that was, you know, really amazing to be able to do that. So, you know, that was pretty exciting. In recent times, I have a young dog that started off in a spectacular way, in that he won from the classes, from the bred by exhibitor class, he won 2 specialties on the same day, actually. And then the next day, he was finished then. And the next day, as a move up, he won the breed again. And then he placed in both the groups that he was eligible for. So that's been my recent excitement.
Who were your main competitors back then in your breed?
Well, Betty Hislop, of course.
Betty, yes.
She was the Mrs. Cairn Terrier, and no question about it. And we became.
Did you two get along when you were showing against each other?
Well, we were both very competitive.
I remember Betty being competitive.
Yeah. She had a lot over me. I mean, she won the breed at Westminster something like 13, 14 times in a row. And you couldn't really beat her at Westminster back then. What's the rest of your question? I forgot.
Did you two ever intermingle? Like, did she ever breed one of your dogs and then you breed one of her dogs?
Now, my parents bought a bitch from her that was a nice bitch. And we intermingled a little bit in the beginning. But then we did have one really good talk. We were down in Florida, and just she and I went to breakfast together. And the upshot of that talk was, I believed in looking at pedigrees to make my decisions about who to breed to whom. And she did not. She bought a lot of dogs in England, and she would use them. And it didn't matter whether their pedigrees matched up at all. And we both said, okay, that's the way you are, that's the way I am, and we'll live with it. And so we did become friends, and I visited her at her home one time, and it was a very nice visit.
Oh, good. So she was more of an individual, and you were a line breeder. So, we still hear that a lot, and it's, I guess they both have their pros and cons, and you've both been so successful, so obviously it worked. So,
yeah. Well, I use my own studs quite a bit, but every so often I do an outcross, and that has worked very, very nicely for me.
When did you decide that you wanted to become a judge?
61 years ago. Yeah, it is a wow. Yeah.
That's great. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's wonderful. So did somebody say you should be judging, or did you just decide, I think it's time for me to start judging?
I don't know that anyone ever said to me, you should start judging. At the time that I decided, it was there were only 2 Cairn breeders that were judges. And Betty Hislop was one of them, but she didn't like judging. She very rarely judged in the States.
I knew she wasn't fond of it.
In Canada. Yeah. Miss Elise Untermeyer, who lived in, she had lived on Park Avenue, but then she moved to out west to Arizona. She had been a breeder, small scale, but she really wasn't, when I was coming along. And then the other one, I think it might have been Mrs. C. Groverman Ellis from Killy Bracken Kennel in Chicago area.
But can you explain the process?
I was definitely the youngest for sure.
Yeah. I bet. So how did that happen? What was the process 60 years ago?
Pretty easy. And if you were friendly with Len Brumby, that was a big head start. You got, moved along, and you had to apprentice in ring with three different times to do it. And I apprenticed under two terrier men, and then, who was the third one? Terry Bresnahan, Jeremiah O'Callaghan, and then Mel Downing.
Mel Downing, wow.
Yeah, and Mel's actually let me see how he marked in his book, because if you remember, Will, he always, after every dog he judged, he would make a little mark or something, and he told me the system.
Are you going to share that with us? I've been wondering all these years.
It made good sense. I think it had to do with, there were different places on next to the number on the judge's book, and he would put a little dot by ones where they were okay. They were in good hands. Yeah.
Because it was like a dot and a dash. I remember seeing it, and I never knew what he was up to. So we just hope that it added up in our favor. That's all.
Right. Yeah. But he was terrific. The other two, Terry Bresnahan was perfectly happy with my putting my hands on the dogs after he had. Mr. O'Callaghan didn't think that was such a good idea, and he wasn't sure that I was allowed to do that. And I assured him that, in fact, I was at the time allowed to do it that way. So I did.
Now, did you just get Cairns that first time, or did you get a handful
just
of
Cairns? Just Cairns. Yeah, 1964. And here's a funny story about that. I was 7 months pregnant with our second child, and with our second child. And we all piled in our car with me driving to go to this show. I was in Connecticut, and Dwight was actually, he was visiting us for the weekend. And we got to the showgrounds, and I hadn't received anything in the mail confirming it. And so I pulled up, and I looked at the man who was collecting the entrance and everything. And I said, I don't have anything to show you, but I'm one of the judges today. And he looked down at me, with this big belly and everything. And he said, "Anything you say, ma'am." And he let us through.
Excellent. So do you remember your first assignment then?
Oh, yes, very much so. Some people named Dana and Phyllis Cairns, interestingly enough, they got winners. And I think it was a bitch. I can't remember if it was a dog or a bitch, but anyway, and it finished that dog. So they had a picture done I visited them in their home a few years after that, and the picture was hung in the bathroom. Yeah.
So, I mean, how long were you just Cairns? When did you move on?
Yeah, I did poodles next, 1967.
Okay. All three varieties? Well, I guess so, yes.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. And then the neat thing about that was they had big entries then, and I got an entry of 165, I believe. And out of all those dogs, I'd only seen one other, and it was a toy poodle, Martra Mullane from England originally, and Richard Bauer was showing her, and I had seen her just from a distance at Westminster Wynn, and all the others were brand new to me, and that was really one of the best judging assignments I've ever had, just to go in and not have any preconceived notions.
That's a great, great amount, great entry. So you must have had everybody in that ring. You must have had all the poodle greats in that ring vying for your attention at that point, with Richard there. And
yeah, Richard was very young. He and I were contemporaries. And Annie and Jim were there. Annie actually went best in show, I believe.
Okay.
And Bill Trainer showed a Harmo dog that won minis. The toys were run by Marlene, and the standards were one of their very, very favorite dogs. I don't remember what her call name was, but anyway.
That would be something. So you decided to carry on after you got parents and poodles. You decided to carry on. How did it go? Did it go? Did you do right to the whole group, or did you have to go breed by breed again?
I went just a little bit at a time. Yeah, that you couldn't do the whole group or thing like that back then. Yeah, but I worked all right because I kept moving ahead. And sometimes I would apply. Like out of the terrier group, I applied for I believe Pembroke and Cardigan Welsh Corgis. And Connie Barton was my field rep at the time. And it was, we were meeting at a rainy dog show, and we sat in the car and had the interview. And I said to her at the end, I said, you don't seem surprised that I'm venturing out of the terrier ring to apply for these two corgis. And she said, Lydia, I know you well enough to know that if you are doing that, you are prepared. And so that was good. Yeah.
So what all do you have? Judging license-wise?
All terriers, all toys, all herding, and giant and standard schnauzers.
Well, that keeps you busy then. Tell me some of your, obviously we saw one of your big assignments last year, but before that, what was the first really exciting assignment you had?
Oh my goodness. Gosh, I don't know if I can think of, I can tell you some, but I don't know if they in any particular order.
Doesn't have to be in order. I just want to hear the stories.
Yeah. Well, one was time when I judged the national specialty, my second assignment. And that the club members voted for me. And that was fine. But then...
Just do you remember who you put up, you gave the breed to?
Yes, I do. Mill Bryan McGillicuddy. And it was shown by Mildred Bryant.
Wow.
And, and Mrs. Hislop was not happy with me.
I'm sure.
Right.
I showed dogs for her at the very end. And she, even if we lost, she, even then she still wasn't happy. So.
Yeah. Well, she actually, I have seen it several times at Westminster. She would have 3-4 champions entered. And so she had to have handlers for, she kept one that she wanted to win with. And she gave the others to handlers, and they were, you know, a very good selection of handlers. And if one of them won instead of her, she was not a happy camper.
As a young handler, I remember being at the Cairn Specialty just here in Toronto at TBA, and she would have hired a bunch of us. And there was, it was herself, Elliot would come up with whatever he was showing, and then Billy Milne, and then I would get what was left. And I just had to show them. We never won. So it was always Elliot or Betty that won. So,
right. Exactly.
But I was there.
You were there to tell the story.
Yep. So, Cairn, the National was your second assignment. That's amazing. What came after that? What could top that right away?
Oh, I don't know if anything topped it.
How many times did you judge the National Specialty?
4, I believe.
4?
Yeah, 4.
Wow.
I would say, obviously judging the group at Montgomery County was fantastic.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and memorable for all of us. I was there watching.
I've judged 4 times. Well, yeah, 4 times at Westminster, but not recently. And
what have you judged at Westminster?
Always terriers. No, the first judging assignment was poodles.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And just poodles, all 3. And then
those are always exciting in New York, though.
Exactly. Yeah. After that, it was always terriers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And go ahead.
Okay. And out of all the dogs you've judged, excluding recent dogs, what dogs just left a stamp on you that you'll never forget?
Well, I would say a number of the dogs Mrs. Hislop brought over from England were very nice, memorable dogs. And the Cairn that won the group at the Garden years ago, Tidewater Master Gold.
Yeah, I remember the dog. Linda had him, yes.
Yeah, that's right. And he was a lovely dog. He was ahead of his times, I think. But Mildred Bryant was judging, and she gave it to him. And, you know, I thought that was pretty exciting.
I'm not sure Betty thought that.
No, probably not. Probably not. So, I can't pick out. I mean, my all-time favorite poodle, without a doubt, was Sage.
Yeah.
Yes, was Sage. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She was incredible.
She was, and he handled her so perfectly because he knew that sometimes she could lose it.
Right.
He would carry her into the ring. It just, everything clicked. Yeah.
Yeah. He was always there for her when she had those moments. And so I remember watching, and unless you were really paying attention, you wouldn't see when she was about to have one of those moments, because he would step in the way and get her back. So he was incredible. So
absolutely.
Are there dogs that you wished you could have been a part of or have judged?
Well, the trend right now in at our specialties is the Yoo-hoo dogs from Sweden. And they've been sweeping the boards and sometimes winning everything. Mm. Winner's dog, winner's bitch, best of breed, best of opposite. I mean, it's really amazing. And, you know, it's some people resent it very much so. In fact, one fellow exhibitor said to me this year, she said, we might as well have our national specialty in Sweden, you know.
So, yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. But, you know, I actually did buy a Yoo-hoo dog, a bitch. And that was because another one of my favorite judging assignments of all time was doing the 100th anniversary show for the Cairn Terrier Club in Scotland. And it's the only American they've ever had do it. And my winner's bitch, or CC winner, was a Yoo-hoo bitch. I did not know Mrs. Theodorsen very well then. And I mean, I knew who she was and that was it. But anyway, I loved that bitch. And so I contacted her afterwards and I said, if you have a bitch in her litter, the mother's litter, that it looks like the mom, I would like her. You know, I would like a smaller version of what many of her dogs are. And so she sent me a puppy at 12 weeks of age. And she never gave me, well, she got her grand championship, but she never gave me very many puppies. But I did breed her three times to Groucho, my favorite. I bred her to Ozzy. And anyway, the most she ever gave me was three puppies, but she wound up being a award-winning champion, producer of 10 champions. Because almost everything she had finished. Yeah. So, you know, she did not look Swedish at all. She just fit right in. In fact, one person said, when I heard you'd gotten a Yoo-hoo bitch, I thought, oh dear, Lydia's gone over to the dark side.
Oh, and no.
So she came over and she looked at all the ducks and she said, well, which one is she? And
which one?
She said, it looks exactly like the rest of your dogs. So that was nice. I just lost her this summer. She was 15. Yeah.
That's good age. So you're still actively breeding, obviously, because you had a progesterone test on a bitch this morning. So
right. Although she's going to have her puppies in the Netherlands. She came over here in the spring, and I showed her a little bit. She got a few points, but I decided not to finish showing her. And so now she's going to be bred to my young dog and go back and have her puppies there.
So what's next for your home breeding then?
Well, I've got a litter now that's 3 weeks old. They're looking really, really promising. It's the first litter for the mother and the father. And I'm pretty excited about them.
Well, good. It's good to be excited. Now if somebody came up to you and said they wanted to start breeding dogs, what kind of advice would you give them? Let's say breeding Cairns, that they wanted to, they love Cairns, they decide they'd like to be a breeder. What advice would you give them?
Well, that very rarely happens, to me anyway.
Yeah.
But if I did, I would.
I'm sure you've been a mentor to a lot of people. You probably don't even know it.
Yeah, that's for sure. But, you know, I would give them the advice that is pretty common is to go to a well-known breeder and see if you can convince them to let you have a good bitch puppy and start that way.
And so always try to start with the best you can.
Right. And I actually have been pretty generous, I would say, in the dogs that I have let go to sincere people. And, you know, it's worked. I could tell you probably a dozen different breeders who got their start from me.
And what if somebody came up to you and said that they wanted to become a judge? What advice would you give them then?
Well, in some cases, I've told them I would back off and not want to do it right now, because a lot of Cairn people, well, I shouldn't say a lot, but some Cairn people decided they wanted to be judges. And so they, you know, they've started. And because there's so many new ones, hardly any of them are getting any assignments. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's not help. That's not the ideal way to start. We'll put it that way.
No. But is there advice if someone that was persistent and said, it doesn't matter, I really want to, what direction would you point them in?
Well, if I had a puppy that I thought had promise, I might let them have it. But I would say it's okay to ask advice from different people, but, you know, pick one at least that you think is the best or the one that suits your personality and so forth. And I think that you can judge whether they're serious or not. You know, quite a few breeders, or they called themselves breeders, have stopped recently. And they're, you know, some of them a lot younger than I am, and they still decide it's not the thing for them. So, you know, it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah. So what's next for you? You've done so much already. What's next?
Oh, boy. I'm winding down. I'm trying to decrease the number of dogs I have. With the four puppies that I have now, I have 14 dogs, and that's
enough.
Yeah. And I don't have regular help. I have a woman who comes one day a week that I've taught grooming, and she's gotten very good at it. I actually would be willing to let her groom one of my show dogs that's going to be shown recently. Yeah, she's got the touch. But she doesn't do any, you know, the cleanup or the feeding or the, you know, other things. She comes one day a week in the afternoon. And but I basically still do all my own.
The rest is up to you. Well, what about judging? What's on the list for judging? You're still taking. You still take when the phone rings. You still take assignments.
Yes, if it doesn't conflict. I have, you know, far fewer assignments coming up than I used to have, and I understand that. I mean, and that's okay too. I would hope that I'd still keep getting some inquiries. I'm doing some in California in a few weeks, and then I'm doing the cluster around Eastern Dog Club in West Springfield. Okay. Yeah, and then I'm doing a bunch of shows. I have to fly on the 1st of January to judge in St. Paul. So that those are the immediate ones coming up.
It sounds like you're staying pretty busy.
yeah, but it's not as, I used to do about 35 shows a year or something like that.
Yeah.
And now I do maybe 10 or 12.
Okay. Well, I have one last question for you. If you were to meet the 20-year-old Lydia Coleman Hutchinson right now, is there advice you would give her?
Well, I don't really think so, because I think I've, you know, done pretty well. And I don't, you know, I wasn't able to be active as a breeder for a number of years because of my husband's career in the Navy. But since then, I think, you know, I would suggest that they follow line breeding mostly, with an occasional outcross. I would suggest that they show their dogs, and if they feel up to it, I'd like to see them show the dogs themselves. There's a man that's just recently come into my life, I guess about he and his wife, oh, maybe a year and a half ago, and he is very enthusiastic, and he has a background of showing horses. And
those people are always good to get going, because they already have a handle on it.
Absolutely. They know the whole scheme and everything.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about that. I have another couple that I co-own their dog, and she's been showing it. She hasn't had much success yet, but I'm going to try showing him a bit and see how it goes. He definitely should become a champion. He's got the quality for it. So I guess I don't think I would do anything differently.
Good. That's good, because you've done so much for our sport. So I'm glad you just kept in the same track. Well, it really has been an honor to speak with you, and I'm glad you agreed to do this with me. Now, sure. I always love seeing you at the shows, and last year Montgomery was wonderful seeing you do that. So thank you so much.
So special. The second place winner, well, of course, the Sky's winner, owner and everything, they sent me, you know, lovely pictures framed and so forth. But the second place, as I was handing out the ribbon, reaching for his hand to shake it, he bent over, because he's, probably 1 foot 2 inches taller than I am. And he kissed my hand, the back of my hand. And I have that picture, and that is so special, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's what we do with royalty around here. So.
Oh.
Well, thank you so much. That was a memorable Montgomery, and your career has been like that as well. So it's been fun. Thank you so much for having this time with me, though. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're quite welcome. And I've been fascinated by several articles that have come out in the dog press recently that say I'm, you know, the idol of so many, and things that I just can't really believe. Yeah.
We have to accept those accolades. You brought them on yourself, so. Well, again, thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Lydia. And I truly mean that. I'm honored that you sat down and talked with me. Oh, what a great interview. If you like what you're seeing here, make sure you press the like, share, and subscribe. And don't forget to look for us on Canine Chronicle TV and Dog Show Tips. And don't forget about the podcast, The Dog Show Drive, which comes out every week. Take care, guys.